Welcome, listeners, and you're tuning in to the Forecast F1 podcast. This week, right after the Crown Jewel, the Monaco Grand Prix, or as Pirelli dubbed it, the Push Me, Pull You Grand Prix. I'm glad to be joined again by both Samantha and Savannah. How are you doing, Samantha? I hear you have a new recording setup.
new is questionable, but a more improved recording setup to some extent, yes.
How did you enjoy this weekend's Grand Prix?
You know what? Always enjoyable in Monaco, always interesting to some degree. And the added element of the two stops definitely, I think, elevated strategy altogether. So as we always say, I am looking forward to talking about it.
Right. And we're joined back again by Savannah. Savannah, how are you doing? How did you enjoy the Grand Prix this weekend?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back. The Monaco Grand Prix, I think there's a lot of criticism behind the Grand Prix on why it should stay on the calendar with its heritage and blah, blah, blah. But it's always one of my favorites purely because of the chaos that ensues year in and year out. I was really interested to see, before everything went down, what that two-stop strategy was going to incur and cost for some teams. So I'm happy that I'm back on the podcast to actually talk about it, because I was glued to the TV this weekend.
Yeah, definitely was too. And I agree, there's definitely the new added addition of that second pit stop, a lot of food for thought. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about forecast scores first before we get into that. We had 1,416 players this weekend. And of course, I'm going to ask both of you first, starting with you, Samantha. How many people out of those 1,416 do you think got this podium right, with Norris, Leclerc, Piastri in that order?
I think there was a few. I'm going to go with 82.
I'm surprisingly going to go a little bit higher and actually go to about 153, purely because I think people were still banking on McLaren pulling something out of the hat.
It's interestingly a bit lower. There's only 27 people that had this podium.
Wow.
So quite a bit lower than what both of you thought. What podium do you think was the most common podium, Samantha?
I'm going to say likely Piastri, Norris, Verstappen.
I think mine would probably be Leclerc, Norris, Verstappen, if I'm thinking about it strategically.
Interesting. Well, we're going to get back to that later on after the quiz. I don't want to give away too many numbers yet, but we are going to get back to that. Yeah, no need to be sad. We are getting back to it. So let's first move to average scores. The average score this weekend was 35.8. So I would say pretty average if you look at what we've had so far this year. And I'm also interested to hear, I have another quiz question at the start of this. And how many people do you actually think in a game out of those 1,416 just simply copied the podium of last weekend for Verstappen, Norris, Piastri?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm going to say maybe 18.
I'm also going to keep it low. I'm going to go a little bit low and say 12.
All right. Okay. You're getting back into form. You're pretty close this time. It was 14.
Okay.
So that, of course, was not the end result of this race. We're going to talk about the Grand Prix in a little bit. We're first going to look at who won this weekend's forecast and which is the national anthem that we're going to listen to. So on P3, we had Yasha Abu Zayd from Lebanon scoring 82.3 points. And on P2, we had Asier Lopez from Spain, 83.5 points. And on P1, David Sentirso, also from Spain. So we have a Spanish 1-2 this weekend with 89.5 points. And I had a little look at what David's prediction was this weekend. And I'll read out loud the first six, because he had P1 Norris, correct. P2 Leclerc, correct. P3 Piastri, also correct. P4 Verstappen, correct. P5 Hamilton, correct. And
wow.
P6 Hajar, correct. Wow. That one surprised me most.
That is awesome. He definitely had his finger on the pulse, didn't he? So yeah. Well deserved that result.
Yeah, I think to all three of them, it was awesome.
I think it's going to be interesting to look later on how many people got that Hajar P6 right. Mm. But at least now we know that the winner this weekend did. So I think with that, you know, getting a top six right does deserve you the win in forecast. Looking at the rest of the top 20, I think it's the first time we have somebody from Israel in the top 20. Actually, there were two Israelis finishing in the top 20. And talking about countries, well, I've asked you, Samantha, most of the time. So I'm asking Savannah now, what do you think were the highest player counts and from which countries and in which order?
Oh, goodness. Again, I think I'm going to play it safe. In first position, I would say Kenya. And I'm going to give them a number of about 465 people. I'm going to put Mexico in second. And I'm going to go a little bit lower and give them about 170 people. And P3, my goodness. I'm going to go with a wild card and say Spain. But with them, I'm going to go a little bit lower than Mexico and say 87.
Okay, well, you got the podium right. It's the right three countries, just a slightly different order. Mexico and Spain switched around, but that's a good guess. And actually, the amount of people is a little bit further away from the right answer. But then again, I got to say, Samantha usually doesn't take guesses at the number of people. So I'm proud that you dared to even go there. But it was indeed Kenya with 116 players, Spain with 85, and Mexico with 68. So that means that there's also no changes in the top, well, let's say in the top five, but also not in the top 10. If we look at all the countries, the first real switch is actually Italy taking back its P13 from Bolivia, which they lost last time out with the last race in Imola. So they're taking that back. And the country with the most amount of places gained is, again, 2 weeks in a row, Ukraine, this time moving up seven spots to P95. So yeah, cool. Actually, that brings me, where do you guys think South Africa and Canada are?
Oh my goodness.
Too many quiz questions at the beginning of this podcast, or?
Yeah, we're starting strong, aren't we? Anton wants to make our brains work this afternoon.
Exactly. Well, that's it.
I think for Canada, I'm going to go with maybe we are, for some reason, this number is in my head, and I'm going to go with 34.
Oh, I think the last time I checked, I think we were somewhere in the 20s, so I'm going to stick with around 27th, if my brain might be deceiving me very badly.
You were on 27, but you moved up to 26. You took a spot from Australia, and Canada is on P19. So still a couple of South Africans to find to play to get that point count up a little bit and get closer to Canada, but not too bad for either countries. Actually, looking a little bit further to high scores, we see that the only changes really in the high scores were in the Middle East. There we have two people entering in the top 20. Our current P3 from this weekend comes in at P12, and our P11 comes in at P15. Those are the only two people after the Monaco Grand Prix getting into the continental high scores. And that means we move to the overall competition, which is very interesting because it was still pretty tight at the top. And looking back at our previous P1 after Imola, or after the previous two races, I should say, that was Jordi Schoonewille from the Netherlands. He scores 36.8 points and drops from P1 to P3. So that means we have a new leader in the competition. First, I want to look at our previous P2. That was Valentin Paris from France, scoring only 16.5 points this weekend. So he drops to P16. Means that we have a new P2 as well. And that was our previous P3. So that was Harry Daimling from Czech Republic, who was P3 after Imola. Scores 46.3 points and is now our second in the championship. And that means that we get to the leader after Imola, and he has been leading, I think, two times before already this season. It's Jack Woods from Canada.
Oh, very cool. Nice.
Yeah, well done.
Canadians representing. Jack, way to go.
And he scored 67 points this weekend. So actually, he was previously on P16. So moving all the way up from P16 to P1. And that means that we also go and have a look at how we scored.
Oh, goodness.
Actually, the three of us went with three different podiums this weekend. So Samantha, I'd like to hear from you first. What did you go with?
Sure. I went with Piastri, Leclerc and Norris.
And did you see already how many points that got you?
I didn't see how many points exactly. I just saw the post that you put on Forecast, of course, as it always goes up to show the overall score. So I know where I placed overall.
I think points your score wise, was 52, I thought it would, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, 52.1. That's pretty close, right? Yeah, 51.1, actually, yeah.
Okay.
And
it was okay.
You were number 101 overall, so a fairly good score for you this weekend, Samantha. Of course, Leclerc on P2 was correct, but you had a couple of other drivers that you had in the right spot. You had Verstappen on P4, which was correct. You had Hamilton on P5, which was correct. And you had Albon on P9, which was also correct. So, a good prediction overall this weekend, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can be pleasantly satisfied with that one, and I hope that the overall results that moves me up. That's the big question.
it does indeed. Actually, you were P350 after last weekend's race, and you move up all the way to P192, so you're in the top 200.
Woohoo! All right, nice. Now I just got to make sure to continue this trend.
Savannah, you're a podium prediction. I'd like to hear that.
Well, I put all my faith in Ferrari's hands once again. So I had Leclerc on P1. I think I then had Piastri and Norris in P2 and P3 in that order.
That's right. And you had Verstappen in P4, which was correct.
So yeah.
That got you 12 points. And you scored 40.5 points in total, placing you 421st this weekend.
I've moved up. I'll take it as a win.
You did move up. You did move up. You went from P774 in the championship to P679. So that's almost 100 places gained.
Yeah.
95 places gained, to be exact. So, yeah, not too bad. Not too shabby.
Yeah, I just got to keep that trajectory for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm taking that as a goal for myself as well. I also went with the Leclerc win, actually. Haven't done that for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that was only in the first season where I was in the first forecast season I'm talking about, where I put him on P1. But yeah, I went a little bit alternative compared to what I usually do. I went with Leclerc, Verstappen, and Piastri. And luckily, I did put Hamilton in P5, so I got that one correct. Scored 40.9 points, very similar to you, Savannah. I haven't exactly written down where I finished, but I think it must have been P401 somewhere. I gotta check that. I will check that.
That is correct. Yeah, like, I'm looking at it now. Right.
Yeah, I'm checking it now. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so P401 together with a couple of others. And that moves me up from P633 to P564. So also close to 100 positions upward. So that's, like you're saying, that's the right trajectory. And of course, we also look at our the scores for our collaboration. We had, after Imola, we had on our podcast as a guest Reinier Gullergan from the pregame Motor Shop merchandise. And with them, we have a collaboration where several prizes are handed out. Actually, there's prizes for all the podium finishers each weekend in Forecast. And also there's prizes for the winner at the end of the season, but also for the leader after the summer break, or during the summer break, I should say. And on P1, and actually finishing P5 worldwide as well. So very good score for Rowan Lisiero, who is now actually also on P1 in that competition. So we've had Edward Nejal for a long time on P1, but he's finally been overtaken by Rowan. Rowan scored 81.5 points this weekend. Not only is he first in the pre-game Motorshop competition, he's also P8 worldwide now. So doing very, very well this year. And I'd also like to mention the other two podium finishers in pre-game. And on P2, we had Ataina Matibak from, well, obviously also from the Philippines, like they all are in the pre-game competition, 75.3 points. And Lucy Inalves, 51.5 point scoring a P3 for them this weekend.
Very nice.
Yeah, well done, guys.
I think it's time to talk a little bit about the weekend. And first of all, I think what we should talk about is quali, of course. I mean, we all know that with the Monaco Grand Prix, the Saturday is the day to perform. And, well, I was sitting at the edge of my seat. I suppose the two of you were also. Savannah, what were your, well, what was your main takeaway from the quali? I think there's a lot of things to talk about, but I want to hear, I want you to take it away.
Yeah, I think it was interesting to see that alongside the race to the end of Q3, what amazed me was the different setups and runs that were going for each team, especially towards the end of the Q3 phase, where McLaren managed to have both their drivers extract two laps instead of just one flying lap. And I think ultimately that's what cost Leclerc in getting that P1 spot. But I mean, the fact that Norris ended up with a lap record was absolutely insane. So it was really awesome to see. I was glad to see that Hamilton was also a little bit, it seemed to be a little bit more confidence from his side in the car. But yeah, I'd stand corrected, but I think they actually went back to the SF24 rear wing or something similar. Because from what I could tell, their setup on that was almost identical to what we saw last year with Leclerc and Sainz in Monaco. So yeah, I really enjoyed qualifying overall. Let's just say I probably celebrated a little bit too early before Norris took pole position, but I digress.
I was doing the same thing, to be honest. Samantha, what about you?
First thing that comes to mind when it comes to qualifying was going into qualifying, I had a lot more confidence or hopeful optimism when it came to Ferrari. Just seeing them on the timesheets during the practice sessions, you could see that clearly they looked much more in fine form than we've seen them in the last several races. So I was optimistic about that. And to your point, Savannah, it was nice to see Hamilton doing well. And of course, Leclerc. I think that what made it incredibly exciting going into the final Q3, where Norris took it away on the end of his lap. But seeing Leclerc at the top of the timesheet, it was definitely a thrilling way to end the qualifying session. I think also what I would say is a few other things that are quite memorable is, I mean, how can we not talk about Isaac? I mean, the results mm-hmm. that he's been putting up lately, and the fact that for the rookies in general, we know Monaco is not a forgiving track whatsoever. So it is a challenge. We've seen in qualifying, we saw that Kimi was an example of one that was struggling with that. Ollie Bearman faced a penalty. I believe it was over not slowing down during a red flag. So we saw some of the rookies struggling. However, then in contrast, when you look at Isaac, he just finishing where he was in fifth was such a critical thing, as we all know, when it comes to qualifying in Monaco. And so that made it really exciting going into Sunday's race to see where he would end up, and obviously for Racing Bulls as well. Anton, what were some of your memorable moments?
Well, not such a good day for Mercedes, I would say. You mentioned there Antonelli, but also we saw Russell, who lost power. So they both got into Q2, but didn't manage to really set any laps. And of course, Antonelli with already, you know, hitting the wall in Q1, but setting a time which did get him into Q2. But not such a good day for Mercedes. I agree with what you were saying, Sam. The free practice sessions with Leclerc topping the sessions, I mean, in FP1, FP2, that also led me to put Leclerc first on my prediction. I did see a lot of confidence there in his driving style, I would say, in the FP2 session especially. And I had my doubts. I was otherwise going to put Piastri on first, but Piastri also crashing actually in the second practice session. Yeah, that made me doubt slightly. I think Verstappen is always someone that is difficult to Red Bull and the whole of this season have been, they seem to be struggling in the first few sessions, practice, and then slowly getting up to rhythm, and it's very difficult to estimate where they're really gonna end up. And of course, Monaco also being a very difficult track to drive. I'm just sort of deducing why I got to my P1 Leclerc, P2 Verstappen prediction. But other than that, I really enjoyed watching qualifying, as we always do in Monaco. And it got me very excited also for the Sunday. Of course, we didn't know what to expect. And I'm referring mostly, of course, to the new rule that, it was another mandatory pit stop. And I think we had a lot of discussion already beforehand, before the start of the race, what teams would do. There were even people who were suggesting that we would see some cars just pitting on lap one and then straight after on lap two. And we did see first lap pit stops from a couple of drivers, and I was actually very surprised, because when people went into the pits after that first lap, we had that virtual safety car just very shortly for the Bortoleto hitting the wall just before going into the tunnel, getting together with Antonelli, who he had overtaken actually on that first lap, but then Antonelli got back at him. We got a virtual safety car, and I think it was Tsunoda, Gasly and Behrman that were in the pits, and the virtual safety car actually took quite long. So I was definitely expecting at least Tsunoda to go for that alternative. I mean, we'd already been talking about before the race that they could do two pit stops in a row, so especially with that virtual safety car, I thought that would have been definitely something to try, especially also because that doing only that one pit stop meant that Tsunoda was just he just ended up in traffic during the whole race. If he would have done two, he would have been very much at the back of the pack, but still ahead of the ahead of Norris, because there was a virtual safety car. Norris wouldn't have been fast enough to also get ahead of Tsunoda on track and also already lap him. So that somewhat surprised me, not seeing that. But as you can already tell from my monologue, the adding this rule did give us a lot of food for discussion before the race, during the race, and after the race. So it definitely added an element, whether we're happy about it or not. I think that is what I'm going to ask the two of you. So Samantha, what was your, if you look back at it now, what's your general feeling of that new rule? And should we also set this as a rule for next years? I don't think that has been talked about much yet, but I think that is going to be brought up.
I think both are very good questions. We did see a lot of all the teams have to improvise or adapt to this new rule. On a track like Monaco, we've discussed how critical it is when it comes to the pit stops, and I think it just changed everybody's strategy. I would say that we saw some teams really be able to capitalize on that, which I'll put a pin in for now. To go back to answering your question, I'm a little indecisive, to be honest, about it as to whether or not I would like to see it again, and if it made sense. The strategical side of me, which I thoroughly is one of my favorite elements of F1, I love that there's something else that adds more pressure and depth to that. And so for that reason, I'd want it to happen. However, at the same time, I found myself watching a race where we knew that technically the cars could go 78 laps with one pit stop, so the added pit stop was more or less just throwing it in the mix. So I'm a little torn ultimately on the decision. Seeing certain elements be more beneficial to some teams who capitalized, who took advantage of it, were great. Racing Bulls was a perfect example, and I think strategically today they were one of the top teams. To have Lawson willing to be in a position to take more of the teammate approach in aiding Isaac in his result and taking the early pit stop for Isaac during the virtual safety car, then turning around and being able to extend a gap that gives him enough of an ability to take a pit stop and be still in a position of being a very good result was ultimately, I think, a top tier strategical decision. And again, where a two-stop strategy benefited them. They took advantage of the position that they're in as a midfield car and utilized it. And I think that was very effective. In other cases, just to further the other side of the argument, I think when you saw a team like Mercedes, who was struggling this entire weekend with a series of issues and complications, and then be at the end of the race with absolutely no pit stops taken, and you just see them fall to the back of the line, and that's ultimately where they're going to result, that was a little disappointing. However, again, if you play devil's advocate, you could state the fact that, well, then maybe they just didn't take advantage on a strategical side as they should have, right? So, yeah, ultimately my answer is no concrete answer, Anton.
Yeah, no, I think, well, just to get back on a couple of your points, I do agree that Mercedes was not able to take advantage of the new rule. But then again, it's also a bit of bad luck. If you have to, like you were just talking about the Racing Bulls and also about the Williams, the two teams that had two drivers right besides each other, actually that does give you the opportunity to do what they did. So you're also just sheer unlucky if you have a team with two cars right in front of you, and that does make it very difficult. Actually, Mercedes themselves had that too. I mean, Russell and Antonelli. But yeah, their race went a little bit sideways. And actually, back on Racing Bulls, not only did Lawson help Hadjar a lot, I mean, he scored points himself too, finishing eighth. That's actually Lawson's first points of the season. So that's definitely a very good day for the Racing Bulls. Savannah, what did you make of that Russell and Albon getting together with just right after the tunnel, where in the end Russell decided to just simply cut the chicane and just complain on the radio over the braking of Albon? I'm thinking, no, was it Albon? Was it Sainz already at that time?
No, I think it was Albon when it started.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, coming to a track like Monaco and hearing that sort of message from one of the most elite drivers in the world, I mean, if he's feeling concerned in the cockpit for his own safety, I can't blame him for what he did. Obviously, according to the sporting code that they race under, it's not actually the way things should be going. But if he felt that his life was in danger, to a certain extent, that's the only way I can think of putting it, he probably did the right thing in his mind at the time. I'm sure there was probably discussions that are either happening now or have happened in the debrief in the Mercedes garage because of that, but ultimately it could have ended up a lot worse had Russell stayed behind Albon. If Albon had braked just at the incorrect time and Russell didn't react quick enough, it could have cost them both a lot more than just a few scrapes and bruises on the machinery itself. So I don't think I can be mad at him for cutting the chicane entirely. I think we saw, it might have been a little bit later on in the race, but Verstappen also cut the chicane on both corners coming out of the tunnel. And it was obviously done with the reasoning of he was busy overtaking cars. And I think looking at a Monaco Grand Prix weekend, I think the narrowest part of the track is actually 10 meters wide. You're looking at cars that are going on to 2 to 2.2 meters wide on a single car. So, and I mean, 5 meters long. So if you're looking at that as a strategic move, then I say you're playing a little bit dirty. But if you're looking at it from a safety standpoint, I don't think it's the biggest fault that we can probably pinpoint in the race. I mean, I looked at when the race started, we had Norris with that major, major lockup. I thought coming up to the corner, he was going directly into Leclerc. He managed to correct it, thank goodness. But ultimately, I mean, we look at last year, even with Perez, Magnussen and Hülkenberg. It was Hülkenberg, if I remember correctly, on the actual pileup, he was the bystander that happened to just get caught up in everything. So, like we saw in F2 as well, the 11 car pileup could have very easily happened this race on the same sort of beginning of the race. So, coming back to Russell, I think he probably in the end did deserve his drive-through penalty, which he did serve, but I don't think it necessarily meant that he needed a harsher penalty than what he got in the end of the situation.
Yeah, I think it's challenging overall when it comes to being in a position where you are behind the drivers that you really can't be able to overtake, such as Russell being in that situation, or we saw others, and I do understand that is not the easiest place to be. And there were a few other situations where we saw some drivers maybe be in very challenging spots, one being Pierre Gasly, the brake failure that happened with him and going into the back of Tsunoda, being the unfortunate victim in that situation. But that was also something that I thought had the potential to be quite much more disastrous if they were on a different track when that brake failure occurred. So there was that was an unfortunate result. And also we saw Alonso. I would make mention of the fact, just as a separate subject here, he actually was in a position to finally be able to earn points this season. He's been struggling with that. I mean, Aston Martin as a whole has been has had quite a challenging season up to date, and he had a really great opportunity to maybe make an impact, but there was obviously an issue with the car, which ended his race very soon, very early on. Well, early on for him with a DNF. So,
yeah, unfortunate for Alonso, who had a very good qualifying day, actually finishing P7. Also, who also did was Ocon, who we haven't talked about yet. But just getting back a little bit on because that was one of the other questions I was going to ask to both of you. Like, what do we think about, you know, teams holding up other teams? And I think during the broadcast was also talked about that, you know, of course, on one hand, it doesn't really look like racing because, you know, you're holding others up. On the other hand, I do think, you know, F1 is a team sport, and when you can actually make use of two drivers being you know, competitive, both of them, that gives you an advantage to do these kind of things. And of course it's frustrating if you're behind the racing bulls or behind the two Williams trying to do that. On the other hand, I did feel that you know, with Russell, he just made a decision to, he was just frustrated, and he made a decision to pass this way and thought that he would get, I think they were talking about a 5-second penalty over the radio. Well, it was always going to be a 10-second penalty, but it was even moved up to a drive-through, which I personally think he deserved. He was just, you know, out of frustration did this, but of course that's not that's just also not how it works. So it was interesting. It gives a different aspect to this Monaco Grand Prix, of course, with, like you said, Savannah, it's very narrow. It's you know, we're looking at a whole race where it's almost impossible to really overtake. I think we've seen very few fair overtakes. I think the only one that I can now think of is the one that I mentioned with Bortoleto, and then Antonelli, which Antonelli on Bortoleto, I personally thought was somewhat questionable. But I think it's on the one hand, it's I think it will give you know, people will have different opinions on this. On the other hand, that's also what makes it exciting to talk about. But moving to a different one that I want to ask the both of you is then looking at those finishing a little bit higher up. Who would be your driver of the day for this race? I don't even know who was announced driver of the day, but I want to hear who was your driver of the day.
Oh, that's tough. That's actually tough for me because I think I would have a few drivers that could be considered to be in the conversation.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
I know. I hate always having to have no choice but to pick. I mean, it's... I think overall I'm going to go with Lando. And the reason why I'm going to go with Lando is a few reasons. Ultimately, this is his first race win in Monaco. He's coming off the heels of an immense amount of pressure in his position. His teammate is the leader right now in the championship, in the driver's championship. And he has vocalized the fact that he has struggled with that a lot. I think that the last several laps, being in the position that he was, where there was either two options there for Max ahead of him. One was that they were hoping, of course, for a safety car and for him to be able to pit. Or the other was that he was going to wait up until the very end pit, resulting in Norris having a stretch with Leclerc on his heels. And I think that the pressure of being able to do that in the last several laps mentally is when you're on the heels of winning your first ever race in Monaco is something that I just think from a mental standpoint, I think overall it's a very good result for him and hopefully an extra added boost of confidence in his position. So I think overall I'm going to go with Lando. I think for the weekend as a whole as well, let's not forget that he did secure pole and that was a fantastic qualifying lap. So yeah, Lando is going to go as my driver of the day.
Yeah, I think majority of the listeners and you and Sam, Anton, can probably guess who my pick was. My driver of the day was Charles. He couldn't repeat what we had as the fairy tale of 2024 in Monaco. But I think we always talk about the false hope of Ferrari. And what seemed to surprise me was with Charles throughout the weekend, whenever he was questioned on it, he always said that he doesn't think the pace is going to last. He doesn't actually know how the car's going to react the following day or to the following session. I think he did come into the weekend with lower expectations than what he ended up getting. So I think he gave it his all once he realized that it could possibly bring in his second home win. And not just that, having a two in a row would have been absolutely like mind-blowing, I think, for him and for the team and just the general F1 community. He did manage to get his car still on the front row, even though we did see this disappointment on his face with the post-qualifying interviews. Like we say, the during the race, he had a few laps where he was in reaching distance. And when I say reaching distance, like tenths, not even tenths, one tenth away from hounding Lando for that P1. Because we ultimately knew either Max was not going to pit and take the 30-second penalty because he had only pitted once, or he was going to pit just before the checkered flag, which he ended up doing and still came out in front of Lewis and took fourth. So yeah, I think Charles actually took votes of the day, the Salesforce vote of the day. I might be wrong, but I know he was up there with Lando. But that's not to say that I think individuals like Isaac and Lando and even Max drove really, really well towards the end. Piastri also started pushing when Lando was saying, "I'm needing assistance here, please put pressure on Leclerc." So I think there was quite a few all-rounded drives from drivers today, so I think they can all kind of have a pin in their hat or a feather in their cap for their performance out there. I mean, I was expecting a lot more red flags and safety cars, but thank goodness that didn't happen. But yeah, Charles was my pick.
We didn't even get actually a safety car for the Gasly Tsunoda incident, which surprised me a lot. But I agree, that cat and mouse game between the top four was very interesting to watch. And even though, yeah, no overtaking on track, on the other hand, I do think it's still, you know, it's not necessarily for the outcome to be no overtake doesn't mean it's not exciting. I mean, it was still very exciting to watch, and of course nobody really put a step wrong, but that could very well have happened. I mean, we've seen it during other Grand Prix that people who are out in the lead make a mistake, and one mistake could have been punished by either one of the drivers there at the forefront. But yeah, didn't happen. Still very exciting. If you guys are going to go with Norris Leclerc, then I'm going to go for Lawson, actually, with the driver of the day, because I do think that, taking into account that there's no rule for holding up other drivers, and just making use of the rule book in the right way, in a similar fashion as sometimes Verstappen does with overtaking, with being ahead of the apex by just simply not braking. As you know, as the set of rules are what they are, you need to use them in your advantage. And I think it was Lawson was the only driver that actually managed to create a gap twice for Hadjar to have a free pit stop, which I thought was the ultimate team game. And then in the end, still finishing in the points himself, actually finishing P8, where he qualified P9, of course. Alonso snapped out of that one. Unfortunately, the most unluckiest driver in the world in the history of motorsport, according to himself, I suppose. But no, Lawson definitely played a team game there. Did not, because actually, I, you know, on the one hand, I understand that this is a perfect track to hold up drivers behind you. But still, it's not easy. I mean, you're always under pressure. I mean, you have, you know, if you're in P8, you have 12 of the best drivers in the world, in the best drivers in the world behind you, who are all trying to, you know, get across you. And he managed to stay there, give Hadjar the points that he deserved, and finish in the points himself, and score the first 4 points of the season. So I think that other than that, of course, I also definitely enjoyed the battle between Norris and Leclerc up front. Having Leclerc set on P1 in my predictions, I would have liked Leclerc to win it, but I was also cheering for Norris in a similar way as actually with the qualifying session, where, just as Savannah said, I was cheering too early. I was really going quite out loud for Leclerc setting it on pole, and then Norris just taking pole position. But in the same way also with this race, Norris actually finishing on P1, I do think it was an incredible performance, and it's going to give him a little bit more confidence into the rest of the season, where I think that in the previous races, you know, Piastri has been finished, of course, not last race. We had Verstappen winning, but prior to that, we had three wins from Piastri. Norris has only set it on pole and won in Australia, which was the first race of the season. I'm pretty sure that to some extent, in his head, a lot of things were happening, but this should give him some confidence. It also brings him closer in the championship to Piastri, and I would say that's only a good thing for the rest of the season. And we're going to go to Barcelona 1 week from now, and of course we're going to get some rule changes on the wings, so that might make it more difficult for McLaren, but at the same time a big boost of confidence for Norris, I would say.
Yeah, completely agree. All right, so it's time we get into the quiz. Dun, dun, dun. So, Anton, you want to start us off?
That was your drum roll. Yeah, no, I do want to start us off, but I'm realizing now that I haven't really written down who got closer to the podium predictions. I remember saying there was 27 people that got the podium right, but what did the two of you actually guess again? I knew you were in the hundreds, but I don't recall. Or Sam, you were just below. What was it?
I chose, I believe, 82.
I think I had 150.
Okay, Right, so that means actually Samantha's gonna go first. Thank you for being honest. I would have listened back to it actually, but it means Samantha, you're up first with predicting how many people out of, and I'll re-mention the number of players. We had 1,416 people playing the game. How many put Norris on P1?
I am gonna go with 31.
And I think I'm gonna go with 54.
All right. No, it was quite a few more people. It was more than 100. We had 117 people with a P1 for Norris. So that means first point of the weekend is going to go to Savannah. And Savannah, you're up for Leclerc on P2.
I think there was probably quite a few, but I'm going to go on the safe side and say 73.
I'm going to go a little higher, and I'm going to say 101.
It was actually three times that amount. It was 300, three times and a bit, 318 people who had Leclerc on P2. So
big number.
That means that's a point for Samantha. It's one against one. We're going up for P3. That was Piastri, Samantha.
I'm going to go pretty low, and I'm going to say 28.
I think I'm going to do a little bit higher and probably go around 46.
Well, it was quite a bit higher. It was 273.
Wow,
so,
okay.
That one is for Savannah, yeah. We had a P4 finish for Verstappen. That one's for Savannah as well.
Well, I know that I got it correct.
right.
So that's at least one in my pocket, but I'm
actually Samantha did too. So that's already two.
Okay. I think then I'm gonna go with 97 people.
Okay. I am gonna go higher. I'm going to say 192.
It was quite a bit higher even still. It was 240 people. So okay. That one is for Sam. So you're two up against two, and we move to Hamilton on P5, Sam.
Hamilton on P5, I'm going to stay in the hundreds, actually, and I'm going to go with...
You and 100. I had it correct, actually.
Yeah, and I think I want to believe that a lot of people did. So I'm going to go with 194.
I'm going to go just a bit lower and say 189.
You're both on the safe side with with a lot of them. It was a lot more. It was 432 okay. people.
Wow.
So
okay. Big numbers.
Another point for Sam. Yeah, three against two. We move to Hajar, P6. So we know that the winner got it right. How many more people did put Hajar on P6?
I'm going to go with... 17 people.
Actually, I think that's probably a pretty good guess. I'm going to go a little higher, though, and say 23.
This one was slightly lower, so it was 11.
Okay.
Means you're only six away from the right answer, Savannah. It's a neck-to-neck race. It's three against three, and we go to P7 in the Haas, Esteban Ocon.
Okay, I'm going to... say 12.
And I'm gonna go with 7.
Yeah, there was not many people. There was two people in the game that had Ocon on P7. So that means
brave.
Savannah's closed the right answer. That means it's 3 against 4. Let me also mention who were those two players.
Yeah,
so
please.
That was Rafael Ferreira from Brazil and Julius Nagel from Austria. So those were the only two people that got the full 6 points for Ocon on P7. How many got the full 4 points for Lawson on P8, Savannah?
I'm going to go low with this one again and say 5 people.
I'm going to go with 1.
It was Sam, it was 10 times as many as that. It was 10 people.
the way that you said that at first, I was like, oh my God, this is how many people picked it? But okay, 10 people. Got it.
I was going to say my math brain was also having a moment. I was like, 10 times that one. And I was like, oh wait, that's just 10.
and 2 times your number, Savannah. So yeah, you are closer to the right answer. And that means actually it's 3-4 now. And I've written that wrong. I think it's 3-5. Sorry, I'm keeping track, trying to. We go to Albanon P9. That one's for you, Sam.
Well, I'm going. I know I'm one of them, but I'm gonna say, let's go with 97.
Ooh, and I'm gonna go for 75.
All right. Actually, lots and lots of people went with Albanon P9. It was 221. So that one is a point for Sam. Yeah, that means it's 4-5, actually. So, Sam, if you get the next one right, we go into bonus questions, which, of course, I would really, really like to. I've already asked you what you guys think is the most predicted podium for this weekend. But I have another question up my sleeve. But first, signs on P10. Savannah, how many people put signs there in the Williams on P10?
I'm going to play a little bit of a wild card and say 203.
Okay.
Are you going to go up or under, Sam?
It's a good question because the numbers keep going are a lot more inflated than I imagined. So I'm going to go up this time. Let's see 218.
218. Well, the 203 was already going to be very, very hard to beat because that's only 4 away from the right answer.
Wow.
It was 199. So that means actually, Savannah, you win this weekend's quiz. It's 4-6. And congratulations. I haven't really, really kept track of what the score between the two of you is for this season, but I promise you that for next podcast, I am going to get back on that number. Or does any of you remember?
I think Sam's actually ahead, but I would have to go and recap and check myself.
I will also verify just to make sure. Of course, we can't let that one go unnoticed, but you win this weekend's quiz, Savannah, so actually, that means we don't need to do the bonus questions, but we are going to do the bonus questions. So
I thought so.
I'm gonna ask. Of course. I mean, we're gonna do a couple if you want to.
Yeah,
I mean,
let's go for it.
This one's very interesting. What do you think? Who was the most predicted winner in forecast for this Monaco Grand Prix?
I'm gonna say Leclerc.
Oh, that's a good guess. I'm gonna say Piastri.
Yeah, so that is why it's such an interesting one, because it has been Piastri for the last couple of races, but it is indeed Leclerc who was picked more often than Piastri. Actually, there were 421 people that went with a Piastri win and 559 that went with a Leclerc win. So if we look actually at the amount of players, we had 1,416 players. That means that 39.5% of the people, so almost 40% of the people, went with a Leclerc win. What do you guys think in Imola was the amount? Well, we had 1,376 players, so a bit lower count than we had this weekend. How many people went with a Leclerc win in Imola, do you think?
Oh, I definitely think it was less, but I'm going to say about 243 people.
I'm gonna go lower just based on their recent performance and say 172.
Yeah, so in Imola we only had 19 people that went with the Leclerc win, so that was only 1.4% out of all the players. So I of course I haven't really gone back, so it's a bit of a step in the dark, but I'm pretty confident to say that this is right. This is probably the biggest swing to another driver being predicted on the first spot without that driver winning the previous weekend. So of course we do see swings sometimes, but usually that's after a win from someone. And so Leclerc hasn't won anything, well, he hasn't even won any race this year, but we went up from 1.4 to 39.5% of people picking him for the win. I thought that that was pretty extreme. I do Want to also mention the others that were okay. Let me just okay. So we already established that Norris was picked 117 times. So we have about, let me do a quick count. We have about 290 people left that had other winners. Now let me just, instead of doing it as a quiz, I'll just read them all out loud. We had 229 people that went with a Verstappen win, so quite a few more, almost double the amount of people that went with Verstappen rather than Norris. I guess that's why perhaps the average score wasn't that high this weekend. How many people do you think went with a Hamilton win?
Ooh. That's a good question. I'm going to go with 13.
I'm also going to keep it low, but I'm going to go a little bit higher than what Sam did. I'm going to say 22.
All right. Yeah, it was 30 people that went with a Hamilton win. How many people do you think went with a Russell win?
Oh, goodness. I don't think many, so I'm going to say 7.
I'm going to go 4.
Yeah, it was 5 people, so you got pretty close to that. Then there's a couple of remaining ones, let's say, that are not that conventional. We had 2 people that went with an Albon win. We had 1 person that went with a Sainz win. We had 1 person that went with a win for Pierre Gasly. And we had 1 person that went with a win for Lance Stroll.
Y'all are brave, that's all I'm saying.
I mean, Stroll's the biggest shock out of it. I was already surprised before that, but now you hit me with Stroll at the end. Wow.
I know, right? I was I was also not really expecting that.
I think if Stroll had to win in Monaco, he'd retire straight afterwards.
I think he would actually get a big confidence boost and continue, you know.
Probably.
it was a surprising one. I saw that there, I'm checking actually now in the meantime, if there were any other people. I did see 1 person going for a Red Bull 1-2 with Tsunoda finishing 2nd. Actually, yeah, there's somebody else that had Tsunoda on 2nd, but he had Norris on P1. Anyway, yeah. Of course, not. We didn't talk about Tsunoda, but not such a great weekend for him altogether. But I'm sure there's a couple of other people that we haven't really talked about. But I'm sure, you know, that's the advantage of having triple headers. We get a lot of time to talk about F1. So I'm sure that a couple of the drivers that we haven't really talked about, just to think of someone actually, Hülkenberg did pretty well as well to make it into Q2, I felt. Hopefully we get to talk about a couple of the other drivers as well in Barcelona. What are the two of you looking forward to for that race?
I've always just loved the vibes of Barcelona and Spain overall. Like, it's definitely on my bucket list. So hopefully in the near future to go and visit. But I'm actually looking forward to the track purely because of its elevation. I think it's going to be a change from the last few races that we've done. So, yeah, I think with the elevation changes and, like you say, Anton, wing changes that will be coming into play, I definitely think it's going to shake the dynamic up a little bit. And I'm interested to see what that dynamic is. I'm just hoping and praying that Ferrari decides to stick with whatever juice they had in the system this weekend in Monaco, because my poor heart is about to have more than enough palpitations for the rest of the season if they don't. Other than that, I'm just excited that we are still having races within our triple header. When there's no race on a weekend, my soul feels quite empty, because my phone's quiet and we don't get to record the podcast. But yeah, it does also allow me to collect my thoughts for the upcoming races that we will then talk about in the future.
Yeah, I think, I'm looking forward to Spain. It's always a track that can, I think it actually, if I'm being really honest, it's a track that varies at times where it can be really exciting, and then other times it can be a little more slow paced. So
yeah,
regardless, I'm looking forward to seeing Spain in a week's time. It's always nice when you have back-to-back races. And then looking ahead, I'm even more excited after Spain, because that means that
we are just
that much closer to to the Canadian Grand Prix. So
yeah,
I'm very excited for that.
Yeah. No, I do understand. Well, I think there's hardly any better way to end this podcast looking forward to Spain with ending with the Spanish national anthem, because of our Spanish winner, not only our Spanish winner, but Spanish 1-2 this weekend. So that's pretty impressive. So we go to the Marcha Real, the Spanish national anthem.